Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day Sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Welcome, everyone. The Bastards are back for this Monday edition of the podcast. We are brought to you in part by the Minute Media Podcast Network. The Red Sox just wrapped up a three-game set with the Kansas City Royals, winning it 2-1. They are still currently in last place in the American League East. 4 games under .500, 17 games out of first place, 9.5 out of the third game wildcard spot. And actually, we are officially eliminated today. So, quick disclaimer, as always, for any first-time listeners, this is not a homer podcast. We call it how we see it. When the Red Sox are dominating, we will celebrate that. When they are getting destroyed, we will be critical and at times savagely blunt. If you are easily offended, press the stop button immediately. But for those who embrace it, let's get rolling. I am Terry Cushman coming to you from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, by way of Windham, Maine. You can find me on Twitter at CushmanMLB. You can find the podcast account at Bastards_Boston. Joining us tonight from the city of Canton, Massachusetts, Jason Kelly. Jason?
Yeah, fun weekend. Taking 2 out of 3 from a last place team. So take that for what it's worth. At this point, I'm just kind of, counting down the days till we play the Yankees again, because I just really have no use for these series against the Royals and the Reds and all these other dregs of the team, which unfortunately you're in the same spot they are, which is kind of sad to think about. But at least they took 2 out of 3. I know it doesn't really matter at this point, but good to see them at least performing well. We had some good standout performances that we'll get into. So, I'll take it.
I just pulled up Canton on Wikipedia. And it's bigger than I thought. You guys have 24,000 people in that town.
Yeah. It's a pretty decent sized town.
Yeah. So you got everything. I mean, you got your Walmart. There must be a movie theater.
Yeah. We have just about everything. Got a nice downtown area, a couple of bars there. So it's pretty good.
Good. There's a Canton, Maine, which is tiny. I wonder if I can pull that up real quick. That town has, a population of 1,125 people.
Wow.
So tiny. I used to literally haul mail through the western and northwestern Maine region, and that's where that town is, and nothing there. There's a nice lake that my girlfriend and I would go swim at, but that's about it. Also joining us tonight from the biggest city of the three of us, I think Denver must be the biggest in Andrew's case of all, but joining us from Providence, Rhode Island, Charlie Smith. Charlie?
Yeah, that's definitely not something you hear from people from Providence, Rhode Island. We definitely get the from the state that nobody knows that people confuse with New York, Rhode Island. That's what I'm accustomed to seeing. But it was only a matter of time. I figured it was going to happen this week that we were going to be mathematically eliminated from making a miraculous comeback and taking the division. But technically, we're not out of wild cards. Not yet. So just the division, we're knocked out. No, it's all good.
I miss
But truth be told, I don't think the Red Sox are going to make up a 9.5 game spread with about 20 games left. I think it's we're 71-75, so it's 146. So we'd have to go perfect the whole rest of the year, and I just don't see that happening, unfortunately. But you know what? We ended the this series with Kansas City on a high note, even though we did not take the season series. We lost it 4-3. The hate has been not really coming my way, but for those that do want to start that train back up, Smith_MLB, and that's where you can find me on Twitter, Smith_MLB.
Very good. And since I'm on a roll, Providence, 190,000. So yeah, I'm rattling off census statistics because, you know, the MLB ones are depressing. Yeah. And anyway, so let's get into some news and notes before we get into the weekend top five. Kevin Plawecki, designated for assignment. Apparently it happened right after Friday's game, in which he went 0-2. And Chaim Bloom apparently said, "Uncle, that's enough." And so Kevin Plawecki's future with the Boston Red Sox is over. So, Jason, thoughts on that?
Yeah, I don't know how you could DFA a future Hall of Famer like that. I mean, it's just unbelievable. What are the Red Sox going to do now? Oh, my God. Like, they can't possibly win in the playoffs without Kevin. Oh, well, that's right. They're not going to go to the playoffs, so it doesn't matter. Who cares? Who effing cares? I can't believe how just distraught the entire clubhouse is over Kevin effing Plawecki getting DFA'd. He hasn't even been that good this year. He's been really below average, and he's just, you don't have use for him anymore. It's Connor Wong time. It's Reese McGuire time. You know, I feel like the clubhouse wasn't this shook up when they traded Christian Vasquez. So it's just seeing all the quotes from guys like Evaldi, well, you know, you can't win championships without guys like Kevin Plawecki. Well, you can't win championships, period, the way you guys are playing. So who cares? You might as well DFA his ass and get someone else in there. So I just, the whole Plawecki thing, like, it just shows how just unfocused this clubhouse has been all season, that, like, this is what they're worried about. They're worried about a backup catcher getting DFA'd. Like, he's going to be fine. He's going to sign somewhere else next year. He's still going to get paid. You know, he's going to be fine. Like, it just goes to show how soft that clubhouse really is.
Charlie, thoughts?
I mean, I almost didn't even want to take it away. I just wanted to say, Jason, just keep going. I'll just listen. Yeah, it's kind of mind-blowing. I mean, this guy's hitting 217 with a single dinger in 60 games of play. Really, guys? Like, is this going to be the reason? Is this going to be the excuse? This is the hill you want to die on? And I get it. This is a human being. This is a person that, you know, a player on the team. But Kevin Plawecki is not the answer. This is not the chosen one. This should not be the hill you're choosing to die on. Kevin Plawecki was never the long-term solution. We thought maybe he'd be like a serviceable backup. He did fine in 2020 at over 300, over 340. Last year did fine, but this year just didn't get it done. He's had literally the same number of games, at-bats, runs. We've seen him. This is what he is. He's a backup's backup. And that's it. And the guy that we got in place for him was just brutal. That one just really hurt in the, you know, not so sunshiny area. Frank German, just, oh, God.
Franklin
German.
He's correcting everybody.
And I'm getting corrected too. Thank you, Terry. So Franklin German, I honestly feel, you know, like, there was that comedian that said, oh, yeah, if there was a guy named Skyler's definitely getting his ass kicked every single time. Franklin's probably in that bucket, too. I don't know anybody with the name Franklin that's going to, you know, pack some heat behind the punch. And we didn't see it. That was – not even one out. Everybody that he pitched to got on base. It was not pretty at all.
The worst name change in the history of Major League Baseball was when BJ Upton decided to go to Melvin Upton.
Yeah, that was pretty bad. That was pretty bad.
And then his numbers just tanked even worse after that.
Do you know it was a fun one? One of the better ones that happened. This was when Mike Stanton went to Giancarlo.
Oh,
I actually really liked. I like that one. That was a good one.
Yeah, I think that's an upgrade, and he's got the performance to back it up. So he can call himself whatever he wants. Yep. Not that, you know, I'm a big Stanton guy, or, you know, I'm glad he's a Yankee though, because eventually he's gonna be injured, you know, most of the year. But real quick on Plawecki, bad hitter, bad keeping guys on first base. He's bad at that. He did gun a few guys down, but that was mostly because the slowest base runners in MLB were trying to steal one on him. And he was getting a couple of those guys over the course of the summer, but he's not going to hold those base runners. Anybody with average to above average speed, they're stealing at will. So there's just no value in him. And the last thing you want to do is keep a guy because he's a great clubhouse guy. I mean, you've got, as Jason alluded to, Nathan Eovaldi had some comments, and one of his direct quotes was, he goes, "That's a guy you build a World Series team around." Like, really? No, absolutely not. I got no problem that they hung out after the game and had beers with him. I think that's awesome. Good for them. But at the end of the day, you got to perform. And one of the consequences to sucking this bad is you're going to lose some of your friends. They're going to go play for other people because you guys just weren't gelling. You weren't getting it done. So that's a consequence. And you had Rich Hill kind of echoing similar sentiments. The big thing that came out of his mouth is we're human beings. You know, we're not just numbers. Well, come on, Rich. Yeah, he might be the next guy to go, you know, to be honest. We didn't plan on talking about him. 4 2/3, 8 hits, 4 earned runs, struck out 4. That was a typical start at Fenway Park for Rich Hill. Much better road numbers, but at Fenway, not so great. And how many clubhouses that decided to play GM have ever won a championship? Probably none. That's how you don't win championships, because you get too comfortable. Eovaldi did kind of criticize Bloom, for getting rid of Schwarber, getting rid of Renfro. That part, you know, kind of did resonate with me a little bit, because they did perform, and Schwarber's actually having a much bigger year this year, probably because he's been healthy for most of it. But the other night he hit his 39th home run with the Philadelphia Phillies. So easily would be the home run leader on the team. Does anybody even have half that? Does anybody have 18 home runs? I doubt it. Maybe Devers. I don't know. We can look it up later.
Devers has more than 20. Yeah.
Oh, does he? Okay. So we do have one guy that has more than half of Schwarber's total. But yeah. So I'm not sad. It's a business, and if I'm Chaim Bloom, my message to this team is you got to win. Y'all got to step up and have good chemistry, because how many teams with bad chemistry have ever won a World Series? So that move should have happened in no later than early to mid August. So those are my thoughts on that. And Charlie did bring up Franklin German, which is going to mess with me because same spelling as Domingo Herman's last name, but no relation and different pronunciations. He's a guy we've wanted up for a little while and just kind of fell on his face. So throw him out there as much as you can for the next couple of weeks, and let's see if he's got, you know, issues rattling around his head that are going to prevent him from being, an effective reliever with the Red Sox. Because there's a reason we might have got him for free. He was in the Ottavino trade, who they had to throw in a prospect for us to take on all of Ottavino's salary. Surprisingly, Ottavino has had a pretty decent year last I checked. ERA in the 3s. I thought that
he's doing okay.
I thought that dude was completely milked by the end of last season, but the Mets figured it out. They might have a good pitching program. You know, I haven't watched a ton, but I mean, there's a lot of guys pitching really well with the Mets right now, including, I think, Carlos Carrasco is having a decent year, isn't he? And he's been one of those up and down guys for a while.
Yeah, Cookie's been pitching better this year than he's probably pitched in like 4 or 5 years, like since he was like really good in Cleveland.
Yeah.
Back when Corey Kluber was there, it was Carlos Carrasco, who people called Cookie. You got Corey Kluber, and then there was the other guy, Danny Salazar. They had that three-headed monster back in the day in Cleveland. And then Cookie left, and I always liked him. Like when he got sick, I still was a major supporter. Like I still was hoping that he was going to be able to stay in the game, playing the game that he loved. And when he was in New York, they embraced him. Like if you didn't know that he had been in Cleveland before, you probably never would have known it. You would have thought he's a lifer in New York. They absolutely adore him there.
Yeah, he is a very popular clubhouse guy from what I can tell. And a funny story I heard about him was when he first came to the United States, when he was in the minors, he didn't and probably still doesn't speak English, but the only thing he knew how to do as far as getting food was to order pizza. So he literally had pizza like every day for like a couple of months. And then I think one of his teammates finally started helping him, you know, get food or, you know, ordering from other places or, but I don't know, kind of a cool story. One of those guys you like to see do well. I'm at the point now with the Mets where I'm like, I love laughing at them, but you know, they made some good moves, and I think Showalter has brought a lot of credibility to the team and in terms of leadership, and Scherzer as well. You know, he's always been a leader everywhere he's been. And I guess if they won the World Series, I wouldn't be sad. And I'd probably root for the Mets over the Dodgers.
I definitely would.
Yeah.
Anyone but the Dodgers at this point.
Or the Yankees, but yeah.
Well, in the National League. Okay. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So real quick thing too, because we were talking about Ottavino too. I can't cheer for the Dodgers. I can't do it. Yankees are automatically out. But I am cheering for Aaron Judge to hit 61. I will admit that.
It's going to happen Ottavino, either way.
Ottavino has an ERA of 2.01. He's got a 5-3 record this year. He slashed that in half and then did better. It's his best statistical year since 2019 as a member of the Yankees. It's his second best career year. That's insane. What are they doing in New York?
It's got to be the program. They probably put some smart people in there. I know last year when managers were getting fired, they were having issues with hitting coaches and stuff.
Wow. But,
and Ottavino, I think, was born in 1985. He was November 22nd, so he's going to be 37 at the end of the year, and the dude is, you know,
pumping.
Still finding ways to be relevant.
Yep.
That's insane. Career 345 average. I'm just looking. Yeah, he's not going to Cooperstown, but still one of the probably more underrated guys of this era. All right. Let's go ahead. The weekend streak continues. The Red Sox can win during the weekend, not during the week, apparently. So we will do the weekend top five. As always, we will start at the bottom of it in the five spot. Jason, who is it?
Yeah, coming in at number five is Nick Pivetta. Picked up the win today. Obviously had a lot of run support, so that helped him out tremendously. But he didn't pitch too bad either. Only five innings. The pitch count got up there pretty high. 96 pitches by the time he was done. So that played into it a lot. But 7 Ks, was attacking the strike zone most of the time, which against a Royals lineup you should be doing. So credit to him for doing that. Did run into a Salvador Perez bomb, unfortunately. But Salvador Perez is a really good hitter. He'll do that to you sometimes. So it's okay. Ultimately, pitched pretty well. He's had just such a up and down weird kind of season. I have no idea what you're going to get out of Nick Pivetta going forward, going into 2023. I assume he's still going to find his way into the rotation because why wouldn't he? So it's going to be interesting. He has good stuff. And when he puts it together, he can look like one of the most dominant pitchers in the league. But this year we've seen him just sort of get shelled early on and get shelled by teams that he really shouldn't be getting hit hard by. So it's been a weird season for him. I just hope that, you know, the off season, he just kind of takes a step back, reassesses a little bit, you know, maybe fixes some mechanical stuff and comes into next year a little bit better, a little bit sharper. And, you know, if we see the best of Nick Pivetta, then that's a good start to your 2023 rotation. So, like I said, hopefully he puts in the work this offseason.
Pivetta, for the second year in a row, set a career high in wins. Last year, it was 9. This year, it's 10. And now he's officially, actually, might have been his last win, but he's officially had half of his career wins as a member of the Boston Red Sox, more than half, which doesn't seem like a lot for somebody like Nick Pivetta, who's been in the league for 7 or 8 years, first coming from Philly, and then everyone remembers he came over as kind of a broken kind of project fix-it deal. And he's actually starting to figure it out again. It's not pretty by any stretch of the imagination, but in his last appearance, gave 5 1/3. Start before that, gave 5 innings again. So we're at least getting 5 innings. Are we getting that quality start? We're not getting what we saw in June as far as innings, but we're still seeing a lot of strikeouts. One thing I'm really happy about is that we're not seeing multiple long balls every game, because that was something that was cursing him in July. It just, it wasn't working. And he went well past a month straight without a win. Just looking back at it now, 8 straight starts without a win. So he goes sometimes over a week before getting a quality appearance out there. It's one of those kind of sad things where every once in a while you'll get yourself a little gift where your team will throw up a lot of runs. But if the Red Sox had been hitting first and not second, there's a chance they might have let him pitch a little bit more into the sixth inning. I know he's at 97 pitches, but I want to see him go longer than 5 innings, because this doesn't really spread that confidence thing that we need to see from our starting rotation. It's just not there. And I really want him to take it to the next step in 2023. I need him to do more. 5 innings is cute, but that's not going to cut it. Not on a consistent basis, and not if this is your lineup. This is not going to do it. You need more bats, more everything, really, because Nick Pivetta is, you know, kind of like the new Rick Porcello. Porcello had a lot of offense behind his starts, and his ERA was stupid. It was over 4. I don't remember what year it was that he won the Cy Young, but I'm pretty sure his ERA wasn't it like 3.99 or 4.20? It was something stupid. He just had ridiculous run support. And this is one of those guys that if he's not going to get an incredible amount of run support, we can't necessarily trust him to give us 6 innings, but I will take the win. I'll be happy with it, even though it was just 5 innings, and hopefully we can build on that. It was the Kansas City Royals, which are a bottom dweller team. We need to be able to put those guys away. We need to get 6 innings of start time from our starters against these teams. If you can't go 6 innings against these guys, what makes you think that we're going to get 5 or 6 innings from him against some of the top tier teams? So it's just something to be mindful of.
Porcello won the Cy Young in 2016, had a record of 22-4, 22 wins, led the league. His ERA actually 3.15. So I think it's kind of rare, though, to see a guy win a Cy Young being in the threes. Normally someone's upper ones, lower twos, something like that. He only had a 7.6 strikeout per 9, which is kind of low for a starting pitcher. But his strikeout to walk rate was 5.91, which led the league. So he wasn't walking anybody, basically. Oh, actually, here it is. 32 walks the whole season. So
there it is. Yeah. So I messed that up. So it was the year after that he had an ERA 4.65, and the year before his signing was 4.92.
Yeah.
So that's I think where I was, that's where my head was going. If you take an average of those three, he had an ERA of 4.17. So that's where my head was at.
That's the most out of nowhere Cy Young win of ever. And the only reason he won it was because that Tampa writer didn't put Verlander in the top 10. If Verlander's 10th on that guy's list, Verlander wins the Cy Young. Another thing too, Charlie, you touched on it sort of, 22 wins led the league. The very next year led the league in losses. with 17. So was one of those up and down guys. Let's compare numbers here real quick. So Porcello's career ERA was 4.40. Nick Pivetta is still 4.97. He's one epic meltdown away from going back above five. So Nick Pivetta, see, here's where I'm at with him. Here's my Pivetta take for the show. This is who he is, and I don't want to go into another season with Nick Pivetta on the roster where he's not the number five guy. I want four guys projected to be better than Nick Pivetta on my starting staff. And obviously, you got to put Bayo in there, a little bit of a wild card with the lack of experience, but so be it. You still got to give your young guys chances. But if Heim Bloom says to me, I think Heim Bloom, tripping over my tongue. If Heim Bloom says, I think Nick Pivetta is going to be our number three, we're in trouble because the expectations for whoever his four and five guys are not good. Here's one Nick Pivetta start that, can't talk tonight, that bothers me immensely. He's got a career whip of 1.38. That's his career whip. That's a lot of guys getting on base, walks and hits per innings pitched. But, and he's got a 1.32 whip this year. So it's not like he's under that. This is statistically probably his best year ever. He was striking out 1.5 more batters last season, per nine innings. But other than that, his ERA is down about 20 points. If he's got a couple more good starts in the tank, he can drop that closer to four. And on paper, it'll look like not a terrible year. But this is who he is. Every year for him will be a roller coaster. And I'm not gonna buy what they're selling me if they think he's gonna be projected higher than a number five, because that's what these numbers are. And all right, so number four on the weekend top five, Charlie, who is it?
We've got our catcher McGuire. This is Reese McGuire just continues to do work, and you know, I'm beyond impressed with this guy. This is someone who only played, had a limited role, went 3-for-4, had two singles, a double, two runs scored, and two RBIs. For the month of September now, he's 7-for, is that 19 now? So 7-for-19 as an average is .368. So he's .368 this month. He's got one home run, three RBIs. Last month he had .385. With no home runs, five RBIs. His home run was an absolute rocket. And that was against New York. This is a guy who we all thought, what are we doing? Who is this guy? And then we found out some information about him, and it was, you know, a little handsy-feely moment in a not so appropriate place. And that was what we knew him as, just that guy. And he has since blossomed into somebody that's been a formidable number two catcher who has these moments of being a number one catcher. He literally has less than half the work in Boston that he had in Chicago and is putting up the same numbers as far as hits, you know, RBIs, walks, his strikeouts are in half. I mean, everything is great. Everything is great with him. And it's also nice to see him do major work and be the catcher in a game where we win by 10. Yes, it's Kansas City, but you know what? He didn't catch game one. We only won by one. He didn't catch game two. We got shut out. So that's something else to be mindful of. I think that the team responds well to him. I think he has a good way of getting his pitchers to do what they need to do. The relievers today allowed one hit in four innings of work, and they struck out six guys. So clearly something's working. And if this is just a foreshadowing of what's to come for 2023, I'm excited for Reese McGuire to be a member of the Red Sox next year. as a 1.5 or the two guy, whatever it is.
When Christian Vasquez was traded and our catching tandem suddenly became Reese McGuire and Kevin Plawecki, you sort of looked at it and went, oh boy, really? That's what we're going with? And, you know, I said it at the time, the Red Sox don't have an Adley Rutschman coming up. They don't have a Luis Camposano coming up. They don't have a Joey Bart. There is no catcher really in their system that is a surefire, like, going to play every day, going to be an everyday catcher, and is going to be effective kind of guy. You know, now maybe Connor Wong becomes that, but I somehow kind of doubt it. He's been very inconsistent throughout his time since coming to Boston. So now that Plawecki's gone and Connor Wong is up here, suddenly the Reese McGuire Connor Wong tandem actually doesn't look too bad. If that's what they go into next year with, it's not the worst. It's not great. Could they upgrade that position still? Absolutely they could. Yep. And I actually do think that they will talk with Christian Vasquez in the offseason and try to get him back somehow. But if it's Reese McGuire and Connor Wong, I think that's fine. Reese McGuire's been good. He, you know, looks like he can handle the pitching staff pretty well. He's got a really good arm. The way that he can, you know, throw guys out or at least get close to throwing them out just from his knees is pretty impressive. You know, the bat, I think, is good enough. It's not, you know, he'll be hitting in the bottom half of the order, so who cares? You know, I think it's fine. So I'm good with Reese McGuire. I think it was a good trade. Jake Diekman has actually been pretty decent since going to the White Sox. He struggled at first, but he's gotten a little bit better. The ERA is under 4, but, you know, we were talking about Nick Pivetta's whip. Jake Diekman's whip is 1.7 right now during his time at the White Sox. So he's still kind of doing the walking guys, putting too many guys on base. And, you know, Jake Diekman was a guy that I don't think served you any purpose going forward. Reese McGuire will. This guy can be your mostly everyday catcher going into next year if you want him to be. So I think the trade has worked out, and we'll see what happens in the offseason with the catching position, whether or not they decide to go get anyone else or they try and upgrade it. But if it's McGuire and Connor Wong, I don't totally hate it. I really don't.
I'm good with that tandem as well. I think Vasquez isn't coming back. I could be wrong. I wouldn't hate it if I was wrong, but you look at Eovaldi and Martinez, I think they were kept with the idea that they would probably, at least one of them, get the qualifying offer. And you get a little bit of security there for at least another year. I don't think that's going to happen anymore. I just don't. I think it's too big of a gamble at this point based on Eovaldi's health. And for all we know, Martinez could be milked. I mean, power numbers way down. Let me see where he was this series. 3-for-11, so not terrible this series. Drove in a run in the first game. And we only won that one 2-1. So he played a big role in that game. But I think with Vasquez, he was traded because they had no intention whatsoever of bringing him back. So if I'm wrong, so be it. You're going to get, you know, a pretty solid catcher, you know, a solid 6-8 hitter in the lineup back. And if he could work with our pitching staff next year the way he did this year, I think you'll take that. But I'm really curious to see Connor Wong specifically. What is his ceiling right now? Because he's hitting right around 259, about what Vasquez was giving you. He's shown power. I think when his career is over with, I think he's going to have significantly more home runs than Christian Vasquez. Vasquez was only super robust there for a couple years. And so I got a lot of curiosity with Wong. And then finally, getting back to McGuire, he's your new Plawecki. Barring another another, you know, creepy off the field situation. I think he's your new Pulwecki. How far? Oh, go ahead, Charlie.
Yeah, as far as like Christian Vasquez, you know, one thing I'm always monitoring with him is how is he doing right now? How has he made the adjustment in Houston? Month of September is 3 for 30 with a single RBI. He hasn't scored a run yet. He's only struck out 4 times. He's been caught stealing once. He's hitting under 250. He has no home runs as a member of the Houston Astros. He's been there for a month and a half, almost 2 months. The guy has 6 RBIs. He has 5 total runs scored. I do not think that this is what Houston was expecting to get when they got him. I thought there was going to be a little bit more pop if we're talking about Vaz, but he's doing worse in Houston than he did in Boston, and it's not even close. So the Red Sox look almost like a little bit of a genius here by making that move, because we got a couple of nice prospects out of it. And Vasquez could potentially still come back to Boston. But if Vasquez were to come back to Boston, what is his role going to be if Reese McGuire is doing what he's doing? You're going to make Christian Vasquez your full-time catcher? I don't know if I see it happening either.
Well, if he comes back, I think Reese McGuire is the odd man out. I think they keep Connor Wong in that.
Which is unfortunate.
Maybe. I don't know. I just feel like I think he could be a surprise.
Reese McGuire?
No. Well, I think he's, I don't think you can go wrong with him as your backup, but I think Connor Wong will offensively be a big surprise in 2023.
It's early. Yeah, it's really early with Connor Wong, so I'm not going to say anything bad about him. I think that would be unfair. He just had his first career home run not that long ago, and it was a no-doubter, like gone. So I'm curious to see what he can do in a full season.
He's been above average offensively at every level he's ever played.
Right.
And I think he led in 2019. I think he led all of the minor leagues, if I'm not mistaken. Or maybe he didn't, but he hit 28 bombs, something like that. So there's a little bit of power there. But regardless, I mean, we can kick around scenarios and theories. The catching situation is going to be pretty intriguing regardless come November. And I think that's something that'll get settled early. I don't think we're going to be dragging our feet into February on Vasquez, because he'll get scooped by then. Some other team not named Boston or Houston will just dive in and be like, well, we'll take him. And it's not like whatever deal he signs is going to break the bank for any organization, really. A small market team, for instance, could still scoop him up. But yeah, all right. So let's get to my guy on the number 3 spot in the weekend top 5 for I think the second week in a row. I'm going with Matt Strom. I was impressed last weekend. I'm even more impressed this weekend. He had 2 appearances. Game 1, he basically closed it out. Walked 1, struck out 1. So not super impressive there, but he did pitch today in the 8th inning and struck out all 3 batters. Now, was this Bobby Witt Jr. and Salvador Perez? No, it was Nate Eaton, Drew Waters, and Kyle Isbell. But Strom just absolutely mowed through them. And it was impressive. And one of my fears here, we need a guy like Matt Strom next year. You got Schreiber, Hauk, and Whitlock in some role or another. But you kind of need a guy like Strom. He's making $3 million this year. So if he goes nuts these next 2.5 weeks, whatever's left, I'm just wondering, like, is he going to exceed the price point that Chaim Bloom is willing to pay? Because Bloom has never really paid for relievers. And there's just no precedence of that. If he's making $3 million this year, what's his market next year? I mean, he sounds like potentially a $5 or $6 million a year guy. And I just don't know if Bloom's going to pay that.
Yeah, the important thing to keep in mind, too, is Strom will be, you know, he's past the age of 30 now. So if he demands sort of a three-year deal or something, do you feel comfortable paying a relief pitcher multiple years at, you know, call it $5-6 million, knowing that, you know, it's the guy who's had injury history and he's going to be approaching his, you know, mid-30s pretty soon before you know it. So I don't know how comfortable the Red Sox would feel about doing that. One thing about Strom, though, is Chaim Bloom, whether he wants to or not, he's going to have to pay for a bullpen. I know he doesn't want to, but look how that worked out this year. He, you know, he barely spent money when he went out and got Diekman and Strom. Diekman didn't work out. And the rest of the bullpen, he just tried to piece together with guys like Brazier and Matt Barnes with that stupid contract they gave him and whatnot. And it was a disaster. It was a complete disaster. And anyone with half a brain knows that Chaim Bloom needs to fix the bullpen going into next season. If they want to contend, which everyone and their mother is telling us the Red Sox are going to be better and they're going to contend next year, that bullpen needs to be fixed. And whether Bloom wants to or not, he's going to have to spend money to do it. So if Matt Strom, you know, is now going to cost you $6 million or $6.5 million, whatever, I think you have to bring him back. And, you know, there's a whole nother thing about he says he wants to be a starter and whether or not that happens, I don't know. Right now, I'm just going on the assumption that Matt Strom is still going to be a relief pitcher next year. You've got to do what it takes to bring this guy back because he's proven he can pitch in Boston. He can pitch in Fenway. He's been your best left-handed reliever for sure. So, you know, those are hard to come by. It's hard to come by reliable left-handed relievers because Josh Taylor's done. You know, we haven't seen him. Darwin's and Hernandez looks like he's a complete mess now. And like I said, Jake Diekman, you had to trade away. So they've got to bring Strom back. He's too important, and the bullpen is too big of an issue to ignore. So whether Bloom likes it or not, you better ante up and pay this guy.
All the toys are leaving the sandbox one at a time. Sauermuur, gone. Taylor, gone. Strom's going to be one of the only names because, as you mentioned, Diekman also got shipped out. The Red Sox gave Garrett Whitlock a four-year, $18.5 or $18.6 million deal, and immediately after signing that to be a reliever, he was thrown into the starting rotation. So, what are we going to do with Strom? Does Strom expect, do we want to go 2 years, $12 million for Strom? Or do you think he'd be cool taking a 4 year, something similar to what Whitlock got? Now, the only issue I have with that is Matt Strom is how old?
30 or 31.
He's 30 on the dot.
Yep. So 30 on the dot. Okay. So if you give him like a 3-4 year deal, maybe you get 2.5-3 good years out of him. Maybe you give him the same similar type deal that Garrett Whitlock did, or Garrett Whitlock took, rather. Excuse me, friend. Excuse my wording there. Can't talk either, Terry, you and me both. 4 years, $16 million. Do you think something like that would get it done? Or 4 years, $17 million? Do you think something like that would get it done?
I think that's too long. I think he tops out at 3 at a higher AAV than what?
3 at $15 million.
That's probably what it will be. Yeah. Now will Bloom pay it?
You know what? Give him 3 at, you know, if you want to do 3 at $18 million, and if we don't pick up the third year option, give him a $3 million buyout, something like that, or $2 million buyout. Still make $7 million over the course of 2 years pitching for the Red Sox. That at least gives us a little bit of a buffer to find more tools into our bullpen, because whatever the situation is next year, there's absolutely no way that the Red Sox bullpen is going to blow up next year like it did this year. There was like 5 or 6 arms that just came up and just sucked. Phillips Valdez came up, blew it, gone. Darwin's and Hernandez. I don't even know what happened to that. I mean, we're talking about 2 years ago. Terry, you and I both were like, this is who we want as the closer. This is who should close out games.
I drank that punch.
I was all about it, man. You and I were sharing the same glass, and we both felt really confident about it. And we said, this is going to be Matt Barnes' job to lose. Holy crap, were we wrong. Matt Barnes was gone, and he came back. So our bullpen's going to have to get better. And yeah, Jason's absolutely right. Adding Strom will put us in the right direction. I know he has something else he wants to add.
Yeah, the Darvinson case is a real sort of test case for Matt Strom. If he wants to be stretched out as a starter, that's what I think screwed up Darvinson. He wanted to be stretched out too, and they tried. And he got hurt at first. Then he got healthy again. They said, nope, we're still going to stretch him out. They did. It didn't work out. They turned him back into a reliever. They called him up, and he was a complete mess. So this is why that whole narrative kind of scares the crap out of me, because if he does come back and then they say, oh, no, we're going to stretch him out into becoming a starter, that might just be another arm that you ruin, because I don't trust the Red Sox pitching program to do that properly.
I kind of went through the starts in Matt Strom's career. It was probably last weekend. He had 16 starts in 2019, but 46 appearances. So at some point, you know, ends up back in the bullpen. And he wasn't even good that year, 4.71 ERA. And he's had five starts or less in every year after that. So I'm pretty optimistic that he'll stay as a reliever. And in 2021, he was limited to just six games and had to have knee surgery, something to do with his patella. So he basically missed most of the season. That's really the only significant injury of his career, and where it was lower body, I'm a little bit less sketched out by that. And if you want to talk innings pitched, he's only exceeded 34 innings pitched twice in his career. One of those, again, 2019, because he was starting games, 114 innings that season. And his only other season with a significant amount was the year before that in 2018, 61 and one-third innings. So this is a guy who doesn't have a ton of mileage on his arm. So I'm pretty confident in a three-year deal for him as a reliever if Bloom does intend to make the bullpen a priority. But it's got to be better. And Anthony Bizzardo is starting to, you know, show signs of a guy who could be a competent, effective reliever. So hopefully we get a few more looks at him over the, you know, couple remaining weeks. I don't think we want to see Kyle Ort next year. But that bullpen's the most daunting thing for me, because you're probably going to be bringing in guys that are unproven, or you're going to be taking big gambles on younger guys in your system, and it could blow up again. I think as he builds his rotation next year, Bloom, I think we're going to have a good idea of who guys are, at least, and kind of go from there. But all right, number two on the weekend top five, Charlie, who is it?
We got Kike Hernandez. Kike had a really, really fantastic game three. First two games combined to go just 2 for 5, couple of singles, a walk, a run scored. Third game, you'd think he was Trey Turner. 2 for 3 with a single, a double, 4 runs scored, an RBI, a couple of walks. I make that reference because I feel like Trey Turner scores 1 or 2 runs a game, it feels like, in LA. And they have they literally have an all-star team in batting. You know, this is also including the fact that the ghost of Cody Bellinger is still there, and Trace Thompson is dominating for the Dodgers. Cody Bellinger is projected to not be in LA next year. I don't believe they're going to give him the qualifying offer or anything like that. I also think that one of the reasons why Kike, and not because of the article about Chaim Bloom saying or he promised that the team was going to be a lot better next year, I don't think the Dodgers, which is really the only other team that Kike would want to play for, had any place for him. So it was take my $10 million now because I'm probably not going to get $10 million anywhere else right now, considering I have had some injury history. I might as well go back to a team that I've already spent a little bit of time with, and I did pretty good 1 year here. But Kiki Hernandez right now, if you can continue to do that, where you go 4-for-8 in the series with a run scored minimum on average per game, no one can say you're not doing your job, and no one's going to be able to say that you're not worth potentially $10 million. So as long as Kiki Hernandez can do this on a consistent basis, you're not going to hear any complaints from me. So the fact that Kike was able to do that from that far down in the lineup too, that's another thing that's pretty sweet, because you don't have all-stars at the bottom of your lineup. You usually have guys that strike out a lot, the Bobby Dalbecks, the Jackie Bradleys, things like that. The funny thing was, this wasn't his first four-hit game of the month. He had one a couple weeks ago when we faced Baltimore, and that was another blowout. So as far as the month is concerned, he's still hitting about 250, but after this game, that's going to go back up. I'm curious to see what Kike Hernandez ends up doing next year too. Like, this year's done. There's no pressure. There's nothing that we're playing for. I'm curious to see what the players are going to be building on for 2023 and beyond, because there's a lot of players that need to prove it, because 2022 feels like some of them may have given up. And I hate to say that, but that's the perception. That's my perception, that players have just quit. And perception is reality to me. If you look like you quit, I'm probably not the only person that thinks that. And if enough people do think that, it's kind of hard to sway us in a different way, especially when you guys are 71 and 75. So super pumped for Kike to have a great week, you know, going back to the positive for it. I'm happy it's happening to him, because this is one guy that I thought, you know, he's done, his season is over, and he's come back and very quickly, you know, put together a very Kike series. You know, he had moments of this last year too, where he would go off and then he'd get quiet and then he'd go off again. So he's, I don't want to say he's back, cause I hate that expression, but he's at least working really hard to get back to where he was.
Yeah, it's good to see him healthy again, because he really is an important part of this lineup when he's healthy and he's playing like this. And I'm glad they brought him back. I thought the contract was smart. They were smart to get out ahead of it when they did and not let him test free agency too much, because I do think that there are other teams that would have been very interested and maybe would have come in over $10 million for him. So despite the fact that he did miss a lot of time this year, I still think, you know, he has a good reputation around the league. So I'm glad they brought him back. Glad that he's going to be there next year. I just like the kind of hitter that he is. You know, he's got 70 hits this year and 22 of them are doubles. So that's an important thing to have. You know, and the fact that he can bounce around the lineup, he can either hit leadoff or he can hit further down. His versatility is super important. He's basically just as versatile as Brock Holt was, but he's a far better hitter and just a far better all-around player. And that's a valuable guy to have. And unlike some of the other guys in the locker room who I talked about earlier, I think that he gets it, and he's not soft. He's not, you know, I think that he's a good clubhouse guy to have around. I actually kind of do believe him in a way. The whole story about, you know, Chaim promised me that this team is going to be better next year, and that's part of the reason why I re-signed. I'm kind of inclined to believe him. A lot of players I'd sort of go, okay, yeah, whatever. PR spin, just trying to make it look good, blah, blah, blah. I think he really cares about winning. I mean, it's all he's known his whole career. When he was with LA, they just won. You know, he was always in the playoffs and, you know, just really didn't have any losing seasons out there. So I think that he does care about the future of this team and what's it going to look like in 2023. Are you going to put better pieces around us so that we aren't in last place, you know, by July of next season, and, you know, the fans aren't tuning out? I think that is important to him. So, like I said, glad that he's back, glad that he's healthy and performing really well. At this point, I'm kind of more just excited for him to get to the off season and really rest and really make sure that hip is fully recovered and, you know, do everything he needs to do to get ready for next season, because he's going to be super important in that lineup. So happy that he signed the contract, and if he keeps performing like this, then he should go into next year with a lot of momentum, and you know, he'll be crucial for however that lineup looks. And right now we don't know. We don't know who's going to be there and who's not, but we know that at least Kike will be in there in some capacity, and that's a good feeling.
I don't have a ton to add. I have been impressed with his walk rate, especially in the last couple of weeks. 373 on base, and then if you want to go by just the last week, a 464 on base. So the guy's helping the team win in a lot of ways. The one thing I love about him coming back, especially with it being a one-year deal, is it's the ultimate insurance policy. What if Xander doesn't come back? I still think that's about 50% at this moment. You can use Kike at shortstop if you want to. There's just so much you can do with him. Like, he's an upgraded Brock Holt, and so is Christian Arroyo, in my opinion, at this point. I think Kike is probably going to, you know, probably have a higher, you know, wins above replacement next year than Arroyo will probably. But still, I'm a big Kike guy, and there's not many one-year contracts that I've ever hated besides who did we hate last year in the rotation? Who is that?
Garrett Richards.
Garrett Richards, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, that's probably the only one. But I'm good with a one-year deal. And I know Tommy Pham had a good game today, but those good games have been few and far between in the last couple of weeks. So Kike hopefully is going back to the leadoff spot next year, I would think, even if Pham's on the roster. And I'm kind of hoping that Pham isn't at this point. I don't know. I just think you're gambling if you're going to get a lot of production out of him in his age 35 season next year. So, but love the Kike extension. All right. Finally, the number one spot on the weekend top five, Jason, who is it?
Yeah. Surprise, surprise. The number one on the top five is your best hitter, Rafael Devers, who had a really good series, a monster day today to cap it off. Ultimately went 6-for-13, added 3 more RBIs to his total. He's now got 82 on the season to go along with his team leading 26 homers. I mean, again, another guy that's going to have a ton of eyes on him in the offseason. And, you know, his situation isn't exactly as dire as Xander's, because Devers at least still has that 1 year of arbitration left. So it's not as crucial, but I think we've all talked about it, and I've said it numerous times. If Rafael Devers goes into the 2023 season without an extension in hand, it's Mookie Betts all over again, and you're going to lose him. So super, super important that they get to him, they get to Bogaerts this offseason. You know, Rafael Devers is one of the best pure left-handed hitters in the game. And his defense has improved dramatically this year. I think that's something that he really focused on, because he was getting tired of hearing the DH talk surrounding him, that, oh, you know, if the Red Sox sign him, they'll move him to DH because he's inevitably going to suck as a third baseman. I think he took that personally, and his defense has been great. I've referred to him as left-handed Adrian Beltre for years, and I stand by that. I think that's exactly what he is. And I think Adrian Beltre is one of the biggest screw-ups the Red Sox organization has had in terms of not bringing that guy back. And I understand it was, you know, the 1 year he had here was sort of, you know, a make-good kind of year, and he sort of was inconsistent before that, but you let Adrian Beltre go, and he went on to Texas and had an incredible career. It's a shame it was in Texas where he couldn't win a damn thing, but still, don't let that happen with Devers. Don't let this guy go. He's, again, just an incredible pure hitter. You know, you got guys like David Ortiz who watch him and say, yeah, he reminds me of me. Like, what more do you need to see or hear to lock this guy up and just give him whatever contract he wants? It's just, he cannot go into next season without an extension. It absolutely cannot happen. And if it does, then heads got to roll, because that's completely unacceptable. So that's all for the offseason. As far as this weekend, just again, monster weekend for him. Mostly damage was today, but he just continues to have an incredible year, and it's going to be nerve wracking this offseason. Just every bit of news about Rafael Devers are just going to be sitting here going, oh, let's hope it's good news, but we'll see. We'll see how that goes.
I'm a huge Devers supporter, regardless on if he has an average week, a good week, a great week, a stellar week, a bad week. It doesn't matter. I'm never going to be down on Rafael Devers. I think back at, you know, some of the earlier shows that we've done, and I'm kind of going down memory lane, even before Jason, you and I were part of the show when it was the Benny and the Bets podcast. And there was a, you know, we're not really sure where Devers is going to be, but the raw power is there. You can't not have it in the lineup. How many guys have we said that about 4 years ago, 5 years ago, about a player who's still with us, who's dominating for us, and is not getting paid? It just blows my mind, like the mindset of this team. He had a hit in every single game, 1 for 3, 1 for 4, and then follows that up with a 4 for 6 performance. Goes 6 for 13 in the series, 5 singles, a double, 3 RBIs in that last game. Am I missing something? Why are we not paying this man? What excuse do we still have for not paying him? Oh, well, we messed up. Duh. You've been messing up for 2+ years, and he still has no contract. This will go down as possibly, if it happens, the worst botched contract in Red Sox history. And I say that more than any contract in our lifetime. People are going to argue that it wasn't worse than Babe Ruth, and that's fair. But in our lifetime, few are going to be worse than this if he doesn't end up getting re-signed.
Not a whole lot I can really add. I still laugh my ass off when the Bluminati tries to blame Dombrowski for screwing this up and not extending him early. But it's all on Bloom. It's all on ownership. Has to get done. And I would be shocked if Devers arrives at spring training without, you know, an 8 to 10 year deal already signed. So we'll see. And it directly affects the Xander situation as well. So those things aren't going to be, well, Xander will have opted out, but I still can't see Devers, you know, that situation lingering, you know, before mid-February. So, all right, let's go ahead and get into the Reds series. How exciting is that? Another last place matchup, two irrelevant teams, but game one, we've got Brian Bayo versus a guy named Nick Lodolo, who I've never heard of.
Lodolo is disgusting. Look at what he's done the past. Oh, yeah, he's sick. Lodolo is actually the truth. Like when people were really sad and upset about the fact that Luis Castillo was gone, not everyone was that upset. Lodolo is actually going to be a star. And if I'm Lodolo, I'm pitching my heart out so I can get out of Cincinnati, because he's another name to keep an eye out for. Few people make your heads turn like him. He's someone to keep an eye out on for the foreseeable future. I'm not sure how old he is. I know he's younger. If I had to, I'm going to look it 24. Up right now.
24 yeah, years
he's
old.
Young. He's young and he's good. He struck out 11 guys in back-to-back performances, and this is a guy that has no run support. So the ERA isn't pretty, but if you look at what he's got the capability of doing, 11 strikeouts, 8 innings against Milwaukee, yes, please. Absolutely. So Lodolo is a fine pitcher, a fine pitcher.
Also struck out 11 against Pittsburgh, and if you go back three starts ago, 9 against Colorado. So, that doesn't look good, and he's a lefty, so that's going to shut down a few of our key hitters, Verdugo, Rafi probably. 6'6", I'm guessing he weighs more than Chris Sale, but 205 actually, there it is. And he comes from the same school as Durbin Feltman, who is like one of our bigger busts out of the bullpen. So who do we have winning game one? Is Bayo going to shut down this Cincinnati team? Like, which young stud is gonna shine?
I got the Red Sox in this one. I think Bayo, he's been pitching really well lately. I do worry about them going up against Nick Lodolo. It's a guy they haven't seen before. You know how I feel about that, you know, especially 6'6", coming from the left side and a guy they've never seen before. Not a good formula for the Red Sox in general, but I'm starting to really trust Brian Bayo and what he's doing lately. And I just can't ever bet on this Cincinnati Reds lineup because it is atrocious. It's such a bad lineup. He should absolutely be able to shut them down. Hopefully the Red Sox can work the pitch count a little bit, get Lodolo out of there early, get to that awful Reds bullpen and maybe tack it on there. But I think they'll pull it out.
Well, what's a show, Jason, when we don't have a little bit of disagreement? I've been 99% with Jason today. Here's my 1%er. Lodolo's the better pitcher right now. It's not a question. Next year, in 2 years, who knows what'll happen? Lodolo is a year younger than Bayo. And we thought Bayo was like, oh my God, he's so young. He's going to be fantastic. Bayo's 23. Lodolo's 24. He's just 1 year older. And he's got far more experience this year. I'm going with Lodolo right now because that's the pitcher that I trust in this situation right now. And it hurts me to say that because I want Bayo to I want him to just shut everyone out. I want him to strike out 15 to 20 guys a game. I just don't think it's going to be 2022 that we see that magic happen. So I'm going to go Lodolo, Reds game one.
I don't have a coin on me, so I can't flip to decide which way I want to go. But I've got my Jerry Remy book, which has been sitting on this podcast desk all year long for no particular reason. I've just had it on the desk. But I'm going to flip this. So head side up, I'm going with Bayo. Backside up, I'm going with Lodolo. Because there's just, you could go either way. Which bullpen's going to be the biggest dumpster fire of the two? You know, so here we go. Oh, man. Landed on both. I'm going to try it one more time. Oh, all right. Bottom side up. I'm going with the Reds. All right. So game two, we have apparently there's a little bit of disagreement on the sites, but majority of them have Michael Wacha going on Wednesday, which does line up. That would be... that would be the fifth day. So he will be facing journeyman Chase Anderson, who has not had a very good season, but had a pretty good last few games, not giving up more than two runs in any of his last three starts. Not a big strikeout guy either, though. Jason, how do you see that one going?
Yeah, I'm not going to bet against Michael Wacha in this one, especially going up against Chase Anderson, who, like you said, he's a journeyman. There's nothing special about this guy. Got an ERA over 6 on the year. So Red Sox, especially in that ballpark, the ball tends to fly out there in Cincinnati. They should tattoo this guy. So I could see Devers taking him deep, Xander taking him deep even. Like, they should absolutely pound this guy. And I don't think Michael Wacha is going to suddenly have a disastrous start against Cincinnati. So I'll take the Red Sox for that one as well.
Reese McGuire taking him deep. Charlie.
I don't think this is a question. I think this is too simple. You have Michael Wacha against a nobody. So we split the series. We go 1-1 and that's it. Besides, I can't disagree with Jason twice. That would just be disrespectful. So, you know, we're pretty good like that. So it's going to be a split.
I think Waka will roll through this one and get a four-year contract from the Astros next season. So I've got them splitting the series as well. Jason has a sweep. Charlie has a sweep? Or no?
No, I split.
Oh, split. Yeah, right, because of that 1% disagreement. I remember now. So that will wrap. We will probably release the Totally Legit or Calling the Cops episode on Wednesday instead. So be on the lookout for it that day. Everybody have a great start to your work week. Take care.
Lowe's knows you've got a job to do, and we help get it done. With the MyLowe's Pro Rewards program, eligible members save more. With volume discounts on qualifying orders through a quote of $2,000 or more. Join for free today. Lowe's, we help you save. Offer can't be combined with any other discount, contract, and or special pricing. Exclusions, more terms, and restrictions apply. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.